Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello, and welcome to the next episode of Exploring Your Creative Genius, episode number 21. I'm Carl Nordgren. Thanks so very much for joining us today for the next half hour. Today, I regard the calendar. Today, I take a look at the calendar. I acknowledge the upcoming holidays, and so I'm going to build my show around my appreciation for the upcoming holidays, because while I much prefer the notion that we want to see ourselves as producers and not as consumers, I do what I can to help us become a producer economy, a producer culture, where we're all able to make our own way. Yet, in my regard for the calendar, I appreciate its time for thoughtful gift giving for the folks that we love. And so I'll share the best creativity books I know of for your consideration for this upcoming holiday. I'm borrowing from what I wrote about a year ago for a new website called Shepherd, S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, shepherd.com. It's a book recommendation site. They've got a really cool concept where they invite an author to quickly profile their own book and then to recommend other books that are consistent with that same topic. And so this shepherd.com page that I created for them begins, as everyone does for every other author, with a little bit about me. And I'm going to share that with you because I've never believed, this is what I shared with Shepherd, I've never believed that creativity is a special gift for a privileged few. I've never believed that creativity is a special gift for a privileged throughout my life as a teenage fishing guide, as a factory and foundry worker, as a creative professional and as an entrepreneur and as a college professor, as a novelist and as a creativity guide. The folks I have met and the folks that I meet, the folks that I have worked with and the folks that I work with are rich, rich, rich with creative and entrepreneurial qualities. They've been everywhere I've looked. Now, before I could articulate it, I sensed and acted on that sense that our creative genius is our common as dirt common ground and even more special because of it. Every time you walk into a room, you walk into a room filled with creative geniuses. So my calling is to help you appreciate your creative genius so that appreciates in value for you. Growing your creatively entrepreneurial genius is the best way to prepare for a future of unknowable unknowns. It's the best way to build careers that we desire. It's the best way to fully appreciate life. And so I will offer various perspectives on core creative and entrepreneurial concepts so that you can construct the best path for your personal renewal and growth. So a little bit about my book. I don't know that I've actually ever mentioned it in the 21 episodes that I've spent with you, the 20 previous episodes that I've spent with you. My book is titled Becoming a Creative Genius, and then in parentheses, Again. Becoming a Creative Genius Again. And here's what I wrote for the Shepherd page. Research NASA participated in found that 98% of us at age four, 98% of us at age four perform on creativity assessments at levels NASA labels as creative genius. But by age 25, only 4% of us perform at that level. This book, my book, is the best of my courses taught to over 2,000 Duke students, taught to hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of other entrepreneurs and business professionals and military leaders and parents, that's designed to help them reclaim their creative genius, and they do reclaim their creative genius, having fun all along the way. As an entrepreneur, I develop creative talent continuously. As a teacher, I study relevant neuroscience and social science research regularly. As a novelist, I explore the personal creative habits I have. As a woods walker and animal husbandman, I live with the natural creative forces. All of these are sources for what I teach about how to be our most creative and entrepreneurial selves in this very short book with a bias for action throughout. That's what I shared with Shepherd, a little couple of riffs for you. I remember a while back, a friend of mine saying, as he handed me a 350-page business book, he said, man, there's a really good 125-page business book hidden in this 300-page business book. And so I was determined I was going to write my first business book. Becoming a Creative Genius Again is not a business book, but it's for people in business as well. I was determined I was going to keep this book fewer than 125 pages, folks. It's 125 pages long. In the book, I'm also playing around more than I have since then with the word generative. I really like the word generative. It never seemed to really work for other folks, but boy, I like the word generative. I like it so much because the word generous and the word generative are pretty much the same word until you get to the very end. So you'll see me talking about being generative as well as being creative and entrepreneurial in my book, Becoming a Creative Genius Again. So the first book I'd like to recommend is How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, written by Michael J. Gelb. That's G-E-L-B, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, and here's what I shared with Shepard. This book had to be listed first. I've read three biographies about da Vinci, always alert for clues into his brilliance. And I've never had a book recommended to me as frequently by former students and colleagues and friends as this book, as Gelb's book. I've read it twice. Gelb draws on da Vinci's notebooks and his work to shape the seven da Vincian principles. Curiosity is one, being sensual, embracing uncertainty, holistic perspectives, those are some of my favorites, four of the seven. And it also provides specific creative tips to help us live lives true to these principles in all aspects of our lives. I love Da Vinci's appreciation for what nature can teach us about being creative, and this book captures that as well. So in Gelb's books, listeners, there's some tips on how to develop, how to improve your sensual understanding of the word, of the world, you know, improving your senses. The merging of senses is characteristic of great artists and great creative work. You can heighten your powers of sensitivity by practicing some of these things. These are some really wonderful exercises to try. I'm going to give you three of them. Gelb urges you to learn how to draw music. Listen to your favorite piece of music, and as you listen, experiment with expressing your impressions by drawing shapes and colors. Second one, make sounds of colors. Look at a reproduction of your favorite painting. Vocalize the sounds that are inspired by the colors and the shapes and the textures on the canvas. And then a third tip, shape the invisible. If you were to sculpt a particular piece of music, what materials would you use? What shapes would you make? What colors would you use? How would the music smell? If you could bite into the music, what would it taste like? Try this imaginary multi-sensory sculpting exercise with at least two of your favorite pieces of music. Those are fun tips, right? Listen to your favorite piece of music and try to draw how it impresses you, and make your drawings big. Make your drawings big. Look at your favorite painting and vocalize the sounds inspired by it, by the colors, the shapes, the textures. And then sculpt the invisible. That sounds like a whole lot of fun. I'm going to give that one a try. I never have before. Well, we're going to take a break. Come on back. I've got some more good books for you to think about.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. We're talking about, I'm sharing with you some of my favorite books on creativity as we approach the holiday season. Maybe some of these books will be just right for some of the folks on your gift list. The second book that I'm going to talk about is Old Masters and Young Geniuses. What a great title. Old Masters and Young Geniuses by David W. Galenson. That's G-A-L-E-N-S-O-N, G-A-L-E-N-S-O-N, David Galenson. I've mentioned this book once or twice in previous radio shows. Here's what I shared with Shepard. How do creative people produce their best work? That's the question Galenson researched as an economics professor at the University of Chicago, leading to this book where he's comparing the two major creative approaches that he's identified. Do creative people create by just getting started, and through incremental efforts and continuous testing, they feel their way until they discover what it is that they're going to create? Or do they begin with careful and comprehensive plans of what they will create, beginning only when they are confident that they have a full vision of what the end looks like? Gallinson studied artists, painters and poets, novelists and sculptors, but the questions he asks and the answers he frames for us are relevant to all creatively entrepreneurial work, and he shares his thoughts about that as well. I immediately love Cézanne's painting processes. I found them to be very similar to the way I write my novels. So let's talk a little bit more outside of what I shared with Shepard. I've talked, as I said, about Gallinson's work on a previous radio show where I compared Picasso's mode. He made over 100 sketches for his masterpiece, Les Damoiselles d'Avignon. He made over 100 sketches. He knew exactly what the final product was going to look like before he got started, and that was consistent with his work. He was clear he wouldn't start until he knew how he was going to finish. And again, versus Cézanne, for whom the painting was a learning and discovery process of what he would create. He rarely signed. I've read that only like 10% of his paintings are signed because he never considered them finished. He always felt that there was something more he could do with them to improve them. The next book, another great title, How to Fly a Horse. I used this book in class the very last semester I taught at Duke, and had I continued to teach, I'm pretty sure I would have used it again. The students and I found that the book was two things, as it tells, and this is its subtitle, as it tells the secret history of creation, invitation, and discovery. Again, that's its subtitle. It also spotlights creative strategies and entrepreneurial behaviors in the stories that it shares. It shares the stories and then illuminates the principles behind those stories. And they teach us and it guides us and maybe even inspires us. I'm the father of three daughters, and I certainly appreciated the stories he's uncovered of the many, many life-changing innovations that women led the discovery process, that women completed the discovery process, but then men claimed. So that was my contribution to Shepard. Here's a little riff or two to add to that. The best known example of what I've just said about women who led the discovery process, the best known is probably Rosalind Franklin's discovery that the DNA molecule structure was a double helix, not the single helix that Crick and Watson were proposing. Initially, they denounced her discovery, and then they claimed it as their own. And this book is filled with all kinds of useful insights into how all creative work is collaborative work because, in fact, he makes the case, all work is collaborative work. How to Fly a Horse by Kevin Ashton. Our next book is The Social Animal by David Brooks. I used this book in class for three semesters at Duke. The students were big fans of it, and I stopped using it only because I was continually redesigning my classes because I wanted to keep them fresh. If they weren't fresh for me, I was afraid they'd get stale for my students, and so I redesigned the courses that I was using that book in. But it's a great book. It's a deep dive into hundreds and hundreds of social science and neuroscience research projects about how we relate to each other, how we want to engage with each other, and why. It first appeared to be an unusual pick for a class on creatively entrepreneurial growth, but the students agreed it made sense when they were reminded that most creative work is done in collaborative teams. So understanding each other at the level that David Brooks invites us to understand each other, understanding each other is vital, has great creative benefit for one's collaborative team. He's a great storyteller, Brooks is, in this book. He uses fictional characters, a man and a woman, and tells their life stories. And he illuminates their stories with insights rooted in research. And we see the deep human truths behind behaviors, and we're entertained all along the way. It's a great exploration of the subconscious. Boy, I came away with all kinds of insights as to how the subconscious works, how this powerful, powerful machine behind our consciousness is just, just a dynamo of a creative energy. So The Social Animal by David Brooks. And the last book I'm going to share with you is The Spell of the Sensuous. The Spell of the Sensuous by David Abram. First and foremost, we are sensual critters. At birth, our brains have significant development to accomplish. And initially, that growth focuses on the sensory control area, since it's vital for our human growth that we fully realize the messages and the signals that the physical world is constantly sending our way. This book is a poetic and philosophical exploration of how we emerged from the sensual natural world, and we continue to be a part of the physical sensual world. It makes sense that this book would be last. I've been reading it for 3 years without finishing it. After a couple of pages of Abram's beautiful wisdoms about how, for instance, the first spoken languages were composed of natural sounds. And so after reading a couple of pages, I need to put the book down and go walk out in the woods and ruminate for a few days on the creative implications of my speaking and the sounds that I make. I'm going to share with you some of the headings from the book to give you a sense of the wonderfulness of this book. You can hear me turning to the table of contents, I'm going to guess. And so there are chapters called Philosophy on the Way to Ecology. There's a chapter called The Ecology of Magic, another titled The Flesh of Language, another titled The Landscape of Language. I love this book. I love this book. Now, on the website, in the Town Square section, under columns, it's the last of the columns under the Town Square section, you'll find that I submitted a column a couple of weeks back that share an overview of these books. So if you're interested and you want more information on these books, go to the Town Square section and find my column is listed at the bottom of the call-outs, and you'll find, I think it's about the fourth column down, a column on all of these books. Come on back after the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. I'm returning now to the Old Masters and Young Geniuses book, one of the first ones that I shared with you by David Gallinson. And I'm going to read a little section here that talks about these various creative processes, these various creative cycles, this time using novelists as examples. And here we go. On several occasions, William Faulkner used the distinction between experimental and conceptual art in the course of explaining why he considered his own work superior to that of his contemporary and fellow Nobel laureate Ernest Hemingway. In interviews, Faulkner noticed that, quote, there were sculptors, there were few painters, there were few musicians like Mozart that knew exactly what they were doing, that used their music like mathematicians use his formula, close quote. Having identified Mozart as the prototype of the artist who worked with deductive certainty, Faulkner then coupled Hemingway with the composer, pointing out that not all artists have, quote, whatever the quality that Mozart Hemingway had. Faulkner explained that whereas Hemingway had learned early a style that he had consistently used thereafter, other authors, including Thomas Wolfe, and Faulkner himself had not because, quote, we didn't have the instinct or the preceptors or whatever it was. We tried to crowd and cram everything, all experience, into each paragraph. And boy, isn't that true of both of those writers. They try to cram everything into each paragraph. That's why, back to Faulkner again, that's why it's clumsy and hard to read. It's not that we deliberately tried to make it clumsy. We just couldn't help it. Close quote. Faulkner acknowledged that Hemingway had, quote, done consistently probably the most solid work of all of us, close quote, because of his early discovery of a method that satisfied him. Yet Faulkner considered Thomas Wolfe the greatest writer of his generation because of the ambition of his attempt. Here's a long quote. He failed the best because he tried the hardest. He had taken the longest gambles, taken the longest shots. In contrast, Faulkner ranked Hemingway not only below Wolfe, but also below Erskine Caldwell, John Dos Passos, and Faulkner himself, because Hemingway had stuck to his early method, quote, without splashing around trying to experiment. I've loved all those authors. Faulkner and Hemingway happen to be two of my favorites. This Mississippi boy loves Faulkner, and Hemingway and I were both born on July 21st, so what can you do? So let's close with my challenge to you. You know, so very, very often as we approach the holidays, we think about on the other side of the holidays, we're going to engage in some new endeavor, some new commitment, some new discipline to make the next year the best year it can possibly be. How about if we go into the year already with some momentum and that we end this year challenging ourselves to do something really special that we can carry over, some momentum that we can carry over into the next year? And of course, I'd be talking about creativity momentum. I've told you about this exercise once or twice before. Folks, we've got the perfect amount of time between now and the end of the year to engage in this exercise. It's called the 30-Day Creative Action Program. The 30-Day Creative Action Program. The concept here is that every day for 30 days, you'll do one of two things. You either do something that you do habitually in a whole new fashion, or you do something you've never done before. It's easy to find an example of the first, right? I brush my teeth right-handed. Well, if I'm engaged in a 30-day cap, today I'm going to brush my teeth left-handed. I sleep with my head on the north side of the bed. With my partner's permission, tonight I'm going to sleep with my head on the south side of the bed, right? Something I've never done before. Something that I do habitually, but in a whole new fashion. An example of something I've never done before, my Duke students used to love this exercise, and here was one of the things that they did as an example of something they've never done before. They're standing in line at a coffee shop, and they turn around and they introduce themselves to the stranger standing behind them, and they offer to buy them a cup of coffee, something they've never done before. A 55-plus person who took a workshop with me and did this creativity cap, the 30-day cap. One of her ideas of something she's never done before is one day she walked outside with her eyes closed, closed the front door behind her, opened her eyes. The first thing she saw, she gave it a brand new name. So every day for 30 days, you either do something you do habitually in a whole new fashion, or you do something you've never done before. And folks, after just about a couple of weeks of doing this 30-day program, you're going to find that you've developed a whole new perspective on what's going on around you. My Duke students would talk about how, and they were usually seniors, how about 7 to 10 days of doing a 30-day cap, they would walk across campus feeling like a first-year student again, seeing things in a fresh new way. Because what are we doing? Every day we're kicking the status quo in the butt. Just a little bit. Every day we're kicking the status quo in the butt, and there's a wonderful cumulative effect so that pretty soon we have some new freedom from our status quo thinking and allows us to give a fresh look at our surroundings, at our challenges, at ourselves. And isn't that a great attitude to have, a great approach to take as you move into the new year? Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again next week. My name is Carl Nordgren. My email address is carl@creativepopulist.com. If you have an idea for a show, if you know of somebody who should be on the show with us to talk about creativity, please reach out to me. I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.